From an early age, we're all immersed in sport. For some, it fails to ignite a spark inside us, but for those of us who catch the fire, it's the beginning of a lifelong journey filled with highs and lows, which all matter far more than they should. After all, it's just a game, we're told. Sport is a certainty, it's a point of reference in an increasingly uncertain world, and the bonds formed with either sport in general or a hometown club transcend both time and generations. Today, much of what sport has always meant to true fans has been somehow lost in a blizzard of corporate communications, fireworks, and froth. The attachments that were once so strong seem more trivial in the global age of televised sport as entertainment. What was once authentic has become increasingly staged. In this podcast, we'll get back to the things that sport has always meant to true fans. We'll take you from the boardroom, to the dressing room, to the pitch, but we'll do it not as a corporate communication, but as true fans of sport, and we'll do it with authenticity. We'll be honest, and we'll speak our minds. This is a podcast for true sports fans, and the one thing all fans have in common is a passion for the game. Now, we certainly don't mean to cause any offence, so if you find yourself taking any, just shrug it off and get back in the game, because this is about the game, and the game is bigger than all of us.
We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
One, two, three, listen.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? Joining me, as always, from who knows where, is Roger Mitchell. Roger, where are you this week?
I'm in Como, yes. I've been around a lot. Yeah, I've been around a lot this week, air miles and things like that, but I'm back home for the weekend. It's been a damn long week.
If you want to belly up and do the air miles routine, mate, we can do that.
No.
I'm very happy to do that.
I know you are the king of the gold card. Like, you've got the guy that comes beside you in the Big Lebowski or whatever it was and sits down.
Was that the film or a different one?
Can't remember.
I know, yeah, I wish. I wish I had that sort of privilege.
How are you doing?
The only special benefit I've got are these bags under my eyes.
Did you see any sport in all your travels?
Well, as luck would have it, being back in Asia this week, I was jet lagged to hell. So consequently, I've been awake at 2 o'clock every morning here, which has been
perfect.
A blessing in disguise. And I have a funny feeling that this week, our goal on goal feature, I mean, we could probably do away with the pretense. We both know exactly what we're going to talk about, I'm sure.
Well, listen.
Without having checked beforehand, I'm pretty sure that I can guess exactly what you're going to talk about, and you can probably guess what I'm going to talk about.
Well, listen, we've had two great guests about golf and cricket, but we're going to go back to what we both love, aren't we? We're going to go back to football.
It's inevitable. Well, look, I'll tell you what, I'll let you go first, because this is going to be a bun fight. And I know you're going to take what I want, or I'm going to take what you want. So I'm going to be a gentleman and let you go first. What have you got on your mind this week?
Well, I'll probably take one that's a little bit more left field. This is the time of the year where you get a lot of this kind of stuff happening. One of my adopted teams, I've mentioned before, Federico Smaino's team, Entella, third division of Italian football, small team on the coast of Liguria, near to Portofino, owned by quite an important industrialist. They got promoted last Saturday. In the last kick of the game, they needed to win because the other team were losing and they couldn't get the goal that they needed. And of course, it came in the last second. And the reactions, what immediately was on social media, this president Gozzi went into the fans and they embraced them. And, you know, I'm so delighted because, as I said once before in the podcast, he went down when other clubs should have went down for corruption and everything like that. And he took his medicine. He kept the same squad and he kept the same manager, and he's come back up. And, you know, the thing I wanted to tell you, he asked me to go in and speak to his coaching staff about a couple of weeks ago. along the lines of developing some kind of train-the-trainer type course, because as a guy on big on values, on long-term, and, you know, it's a little bit of the stuff that Chris was talking about, you know, and you were as well, you know, I've failed so many times, that's why I succeed, all that kind of stuff. And as luck would have it, the meeting was the day after they had lost to Piacenza, which is their competitors to go up. So they were gutted, and they had every reason to be, you know, on the floor for strangers coming in, strangers like me. And they were so kind, you know, they put the smile on their face and they really gave all their attention. So I was watching on Saturday, and the other team were getting beat, Piacenza were getting beat, and it's 2 minutes to go, it's 1 minute to go, and boom, goal, you know. And honestly, Grant, I'm just so delighted. This is a team of value, of people that I think is everything that sports should be about. They're trying to do the right thing. So one of my goals this week is Virtus Intella of Chiavari.
Well, listen, I didn't even want to interrupt there, Ross. So you're basically saying that you are the secret weapon. You turn them around single-handedly.
No, I did nothing that day. I did nothing, nothing at all. Next season, the pre-season, we're going to go in and see what we can try and discuss with them.
Now, what, have they been promoted to Serie A or
no,
into Serie B?
Serie B. This is a very small team. They really shouldn't be in Serie B. They're a small, small team, but the man that owns them is a serious guy. He's got a big group behind him. He doesn't spend money to get promoted. He kind of like makes them do it on their own, but he's got long-term planning and he sticks with people he believes in. So next season, Serie B.
This game was last Sunday, right?
Saturday was.
Okay. So, that's obviously the first dramatic end in, a more incredible week than, I can't remember a more incredible week. And you know, I could talk about Company's goal, I could talk about Liverpool, I could talk about Spurs, I could talk about Chelsea and Arsenal. There's so much to talk about, and I know we're going to talk about all of those. But I am, for my goal, I'm going to talk about the ball boys at Anfield. and, you know, this was a story, I love this on Reddit. There was a story in, actually, a lot of the papers. I can't remember which one I read it in, but I then found it subsequently in a bunch of papers. And they were talking about the fact that if you watch the fourth goal, the Liverpool winner that they scored, you know, the 79th minute
corner,
was. I've never seen a goal scored like that before, ever. In 50-odd years of watching football, I've never seen anybody score a goal like that before from a corner. And if you look at the playback, you'll see the ball boy, as soon as the ball goes into touch, he's there and he throws the ball straight to Trent Arnold. And what I hadn't realised at the time was that the Anfield coaches, Klopp had sort of passed the word down that they'd noticed that every time a decision went against Barcelona, whether it was a nailed-on decision that should have gone against them or not, they complained to the ref. And so they'd done their homework. They'd seen that they just switch off after every single time, whether it's a throw-in, a free kick, no matter what it is, there's a minute where they switch off. And to have that kind of preparation and to notice someone like that and to prepare for it, I mean, the chance of something like that happening is, you know, is astronomically high. But that thorough preparation, noticing that was a trait that the Barcelona team had, so to capitalize on that in such dramatic fashion was phenomenal. And you know, you've got Graham Souness on Sky Sports saying he's going to buy this young ball boy two season tickets for next year and two tickets to the final in Madrid. And it was just fantastic to see something like that, the meticulousness of that approach, to actually pay off and to be responsible for the winning goal was just magical to me.
I get that completely. Actually, a couple of times in the past when I was at Prozone and that kind of like deep analysis, Y Scout again, I've seen that before. That's the kind of stuff Bielsa does. And you know, for people that aren't, you know, close to these kind of data analysis companies, you get the reaction you've just had. But honestly, this is pretty common, Grant. You know, like there's some people that get really, really...
Shut off, Rog. Don't ruin my magic. Yeah, no, don't ruin my magic.
It's pretty common. You get guys that say that most of the games these days are decided by the kind of turnarounds with the ball boys and things like that. But it was a great moment. And you know what? I'd like to take the point you made about Barcelona switching off. Let's talk a little bit about Barcelona. and maybe it's easy to do it, you know, after this week. But I've not been convinced by this team for about 3 or 4 years. I must admit, you know, Messi's covered so much up. Suarez, I think he's a little bit heavy now, and you know, and then the midfield, and I just think this is a team that probably should have had a serious renewal about 3 or 4 years ago, and that one guy has covered it up a little bit, because they did that with PSG. They got a hammering, and they got a hammering from Roma last year in exactly the same circumstances. This is a team that's, let's say, the spine has got maybe a double hernia, I think.
Well, does this go back to the moment when your favourite player, Iniesta, retired, or was there a time before that?
I think Iniesta, Xavi. I think that was an understated part of the way that they could dominate games. Obviously, you know, then you had Puyol in the back, and with Pique. Puyol, I think, is a huge miss, because he was the real heart and soul of that club. And you know, when you see Messi with the armband, you know, whether it's here or in Barcelona for Argentina, I've always got doubts, because I just don't think that's his role, mate. I think
He's a leader by example, but you know, I think that's not the kind of leader, because everybody knows he's brilliant, so you almost expect it from him. So when he does something brilliant, I don't know that it inspires people. They're there going, well, yeah, he's Lionel Messi. That's what he's supposed to do. So yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he wouldn't be my captain anyway.
And the other thing on that, and people, there was a lovely comment from one of the people that follows the podcast, Paul McDonald, who's always very, very astute, and he said, is anybody remembering now the open goal that Dembele missed to make it 4-0 in the Camp Nou?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, didn't seem a lot at the time, did it? But wow, you know, that guy cost 130 million, just to put it into context. Great ROI on that one, mate, eh?
Yeah, right. Well, look, I'm sure we're going to come back and talk a lot more about this stuff in general. But what's your own goal this week? I have a nasty feeling you and I have got the same own goal.
I don't think so. I've got a couple. My own goal is Bakayoko of Milan having a
with Gattuso.
Yeah, with Gattuso.
Yeah, that was mine.
Was it really? Right. Really?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
Right. Okay.
Go on. Talk about it. That's all right.
Well, you know, listen, you know, we're going to get into the whole, you know, grumpy old men again thing. This is the reality of it. You know, guys having an attitude because they're not getting picked. You know, mumping on the sidelines, taking 8 minutes to put on their shin pads when they get called to come on. I just don't think they've got any respect. You know, you've got to respect a guy that's had a career like Gattuso. Not really talented guy, but achieved everything, won everything.
He's won everything, yeah, exactly.
Because of who he is. You know, he's also got the balls to stand up to Joe Jordan. That in itself, you know, like, you just take your hat off to that. So where does this guy get off, you know, giving him attitude? And I just think, you know, coming back to Entella at the start, which I'm going to do probably consistently, you now need to build a team choosing the man before the player. Because, you know, you can have the most talented guy in the world, but if they're going to come out with that kind of shit, then just tell them to fuck off, you know? You know, like, I don't want you in my club. I don't want you in my dressing room. I prefer to lose.
Well, you know, it's an interesting point, Roger. And I was thinking the same thing when I watched it. I then started thinking about, okay, how does that change? How do we go back to the club being more important than the players? Because, you know, that's essentially where we are now, right? That these superstar players.
I'll tell you, Grant.
Well, no.
On you go.
It just occurred to me that in many ways, actually, social media in this instance might actually do us some good, Rog, because the more. Yeah, you know, that's the sort of thing that I saw it on social media. I didn't see it in the game. I didn't see it anywhere else. You know, I saw it on social media. In fact, it was probably you that posted it, so I probably stole this from you in the first place. But I wouldn't have seen that in the past. And I think the more that these little vignettes that these cameras pick up get posted and shared around, the more true fans are going to rebel against these kind of players. And they are going to get to the point where they go, do you know what? This guy doesn't represent the values of our club. I mean, this is AC Milan, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
He doesn't represent the values of our club. And if he does get sat down by the manager, we understand. We're not gonna call for the head of the manager for sitting down these expensive players. And look, fans are fickle, and that might change if the, you know, the team start losing or whatever it may be. But I actually think there may be a role for social media to play in this for the good, and it may help us get back to that. Those, you know, those Clough days where the club was more important than the players.
Well, you're right. Obviously, my answer is just a lot simpler. Just find guys like Andy Robertson. You know, like how difficult
well,
is that?
It's easier said than done, Roger.
Well, no, I mean, like, I'm not talking about, you know, a great left back, and but you know that kind of like what I call the right stuff. It's not that this generation doesn't have it. I mean, in some ways, this generation is a lot stronger than ours in the sense that they've understood that, you know, macroeconomically, we've left them in the shit and they're just going to get on with it. They don't moan and all that kind of stuff. So these guys are out there. It's just that the people choosing players and putting teams together are pretty poor and they don't know what they're doing. It's not that difficult for people of experience to meet the boy or the girl in this case, in the future going forward, and work out who they are. Go and speak to their friends, their parents. You're going to find out what kind of character this is. Eliminate the ones with bad agents, because, you know, even if they are good, they'll get turned. And you know, the market for players is so vast. It's not as if you do that, it then leaves you with, I've got a small pool to pick from. You've still got a huge pool to pick from. You know, like this has got it. Well, it doesn't have to end, but it should end. There's ways to put a team together of good boys that are going to work for each other in the team. Guys like Henderson as well. I don't like Jordan Henderson as a player. He's not my type of player. But the other night,
he speaks very highly of you, Rog.
But I mean, like, look at him. You know, even the other night, he was a proper captain. You know, that thing when Messi had a bit of a go at Robertson, and he went in there and he sorted it out. You know, that's what Messi doesn't do. So,
but it, you know, it's interesting talking about this. How many of these players, the Robertsons, the Alexander Arnolds of the world, the Hendersons, how many of them actually started out playing for their hometown club or the club they supported as a boy? You know, to me, that is a key part of this. These guys didn't get picked up by some academy, you know, hundreds of miles away. A lot of these, if you look at the players that began with their hometown club, they come into the game with an appreciation that they are lucky to be playing for this club. It's something they've always dreamed about, and the club is bigger than them. You know, they don't get carried away, because for them, it's not in the beginning about the money. It's about, Christ, I've got a chance to play for Liverpool, or I've got a chance to play for Sunderland. And I think if you look at these players and you trace them back, you'll find that the players that start off with the team they supported as a boy tend to have the right attitude.
I agree.
Because it's in them from the very, very beginning.
I agree. And again, let's segue back into the great week we've had. Let's look at Ajax, which, you know, they've been the kings of doing that in a lot of ways. And you look what happened. You know, there's no way they should have got to the final this year if you believe that there's a direct correlation between... You're right. We're just punch drunk a little bit. What's the quarter final? What's the Premier League?
No, you're right. This just never got as far.
But they do, because they've got a good eye to youth development. And that's to your point. You know, it makes such a huge difference if you can put four or five, the way Fergie did in the late 90s, or five of the local kids, then that's your base. And people have lost that. They're playing bloody Football Manager now at clubs. And, you know, let's bring in Sanchez and let's bring in Pogba. And, you know, what the hell's going on? You need a base. You need, it's a local club. You need a base from which to build.
Well, yeah, look, it's tough. I mean, Manchester United is the perfect example, right? I mean, they had that base. And as those players got older, they didn't bring guys through the youth team. They brought in big names, and eventually the balance of the team gets messed up. And at some point, you just have to reset. You just have to take your lumps and have a couple of bad seasons and blood those youngsters. You know, the whole Alan Hansen, you'll never win anything playing with kids. You know, it's one of the classic misstatements in football history.
Yeah.
For that very reason, that Fergie just reset them and said, you know what, screw it. I'm going to put six of these kids in the team. And it takes balls to do that. And, you know, I don't know if Man United now could do that again. I don't think they'd be given the latitude.
Well, not with the current owners, but with people that understood football. You know, your point is correct. The fans will buy that. If you say to the fans, you're going to have to give me 2-3 years because...
Well, that's it. It's communication. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Let's come back to Barcelona now that you've talked us through it. Reminds me, Barcelona were successful when it was dominated by the young kids from the local cantera. You know, Man United the same, Ajax the same, Dortmund and those great years of Klopp the same. When are people going to realise that you can't put the mix and match from Woolworths together to create a dynasty? You've got to have at least 4 or 5 from the local area. And I think that's going to come back into vogue.
Now, I have to ask you, I'm genuinely curious. We called that the pick and mix where I came from. Did you just remember it wrongly, or was it called the mix and match up in Scotland? I'm just curious.
I don't know, because I don't think I ever paid for them. I think you kind of just like put them in your pocket as you go by and walk out the shop, whatever they're fucking called. I don't know.
See, look at me. I was just a goody two shoes.
It was too easy.
Sticky fingers. Well, now that you've taken my own goal, what was your other one? You said you had a couple.
This one's very funny. I'll read out this quote after one of the last games at the San Siro, you know, alternatively called the Giuseppe Meazza Stadio in Milan, San Siro, or La Scala of football.
Do you pick stories every week just so you can show off your Italian accent?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, actually, I
thought so. Well, no, most of my stuff comes from the media here. So here's the quote.
Your mates back in home in Glasgow will be hating on you now.
Yeah, here's the quote. Comprehensive examination showed that at present there is no risk of collapse, but in the near future, this may change. Quote.
What was that talking about?
The vibrations at the stadium led to some stuff falling off the roof. Right, you know, like this is a country that a couple of months ago tragically had a whole bridge in Genoa just collapsed, right? This is the shit that goes on here. You know, so you've got a stadium literally falling apart and the job's worth for the day probably on €500,000 salary says, comprehensive examination showed that at present there is no risk of collapse. I can assure you I'm not a wife beater. You know, like, what are they doing, Grant? But, I mean, apart from the ridiculousness of how the crisis managed it, but this is a metaphor for Italian football, you know?
It feels like it's a metaphor for the country, sadly, at the moment.
Yeah,
With everything that's going on, it does seem to be falling into disrepair at the moment.
So, San Siro's collapsing. That was my own goal.
Well, look, I tell you what, let's forget all the goal on goal. Let's just talk about what a week this has been for football lovers and sports lovers. For me, it started off on Monday with that Vincent Kompany goal.
Superb. I mean,
it was a breathtaking goal from a central defender. I mean, that thing flew into the top corner like a rocket. Schmeichel, who had a fantastic game, had a couple of incredible saves from Aguero, never got close to that thing. And to win a tight game like that in the way he did, fair play. I mean, that was English football at its best. You know, Leicester were pinned back, but very dangerous.
Roy of the Rovers stuff.
I mean, you could feel the tension in that stadium.
They were getting into the moment where you start getting tense. Oh. The fans start getting tense. We're not going to get the win. We're not going to get the 3 points.
Well, just the noise. I mean, the singing after it, the relief of tension after that goal went in. I mean, the crowd didn't shut up for the rest of the game. There wasn't much of it left, but it was fantastic to watch. And you know, Kompany, he's what a tireless servant for Man City. What a great pro.
The right stuff. There you go.
Yeah,
there you
exactly
go.
Right.
You can see it. You saw it coming out, even in the clips of the documentary on Amazon. This is a good lad.
Yeah, exactly right. Yep.
You know,
exactly
you right. could see it. So, like, how difficult can it be? These are the kind of guys you base your team around.
Well, and it's funny, right? Because apparently he's on the chopping block. You know, I'd be amazed if they got rid of him. Not just because of that goal. I don't think that would change anyone's mind. But I'd be astonished if Guardiola didn't keep him around. Just and say to him, look, you're not going to play this year. I mean, you may get a few games, but I want you around the dressing room. I want you around the team. I want that influence because you're absolutely right. It's what every team needs.
And, well, obviously he's got the injuries in there, and of course, probably physically, he can't do it anymore, certainly not week after week. But early on that game, he put in a tackle that, you know, set the tone for his whole team. And that's what captains do. You know, he's not a guy that can play 50 games a season now, but he's still, when he can play, he is still their best defender, their best leader. And I'm just a huge fan of that guy. Huge fan.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it was, well, I say, for the neutral, it was just a fantastic game. Well, I took Monday. You can have Tuesday. Go on.
Tuesday. It must be Belgium. What was it? Tuesday.
Liverpool. Liverpool-Barca was Tuesday.
Yeah. Just like I said, let's not go back to Barcelona. We've said that. I think Klopp is amazing. You know, a lot of people don't like him. He did amazing things at Dortmund. He's built that team really well, not in a kind of, like, as we said before, random opportunistic way. He spent big on the areas he needed to spend big. The way that he's worked out that pressing, even guys like, you know, Sturridge are now getting with the program. You know, good pressing, knows what he's doing, energy. They deserved it so much, you know, because they had that game without Salah, and you know, like,
well, and Bobby Firmino, Firmino either.
So and then my boy Andy Robertson, who I think is just fantastic. I'm so pleased for them. I'm so pleased for Liverpool, because I don't think they're going to win the Premiership now after Vincent Kompany.
Yeah, it's a big reach to see Brighton turning Man City over.
Yeah. So, you know, great. But like I say, and I had a little, you know, heat on Twitter for this. I saw the same thing last year in Roma. So I was saying to, you know, like, don't go over the top. It's not as if you've knocked out Cassius Clay in 1966. You know, like, you're not...
You miserable old bastard.
Well, it's true. I mean, like, it's the same thing last year. They're there for the taking. They're there for the taking. And they took them. Good luck.
Hang on. Wait. They're there for the taking, and there's having to beat them 4-0. I mean, that's not, you know, yes, they're there to be beaten, but beating them 4-0 when you have to, I mean, it was fantastic.
It was great.
I don't take anything away from them.
I don't take anything away. I'm just benchmarking the fact that last year Roma had the same situation. Well, they needed 3, not 4, and they did it. You know, PSG took how many out of them? You know, it is a team that if you get them on their back foot, they fold. So Anfield's not the place you want to go when you've got that kind of spine, and Liverpool did great. I know. Good luck to them. Really good luck to them. But
I'm with you on Klopp. I think he's done wonders. And I think back to when he first came, and they were talking about this high pressing style and how they're going to do it. And I realised watching this game, the progression has been seamless. Yeah. I mean, he has just gently brought that team through. There was never a period where it didn't work. You know, they obviously took time to settle into it, but they weren't having a run of bad results. I mean, he's done such a phenomenal job, and he gets overshadowed by Guardiola, obviously, because of the trophies that the guy's winning. But to bring a team like Liverpool back to where he has so seemingly effortlessly has been fantastic to see. And I've got to say, the bit that I loved about the game, I don't know if you saw this, the players and the fans singing "You'll Never Walk Alone" at the end. Did you see this clip?
Oh, when they stole our song, you mean? Yeah.
Just let it go. Just take a week off.
But it was great.
I loved seeing the emotion, but I loved seeing the camera sort of pan along all the players.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could see Henderson and Milner just chirping at the top of their voices. And the other players, God bless them, the players that weren't born in England, just sort of quiet until the chorus came on. You know, it's like, you know, you don't know the words, but you know the chorus. But then just giving it everything when it got to the "You'll Never Walk Alone." But it was just, the whole night was such a special night. I thought it was.
I watched it on Italian TV, and you know, you get a different perspective. And they gave it all the tradition, you know, the whole, you know, the "This is Anfield" plaque, and they came in early into the production, and they didn't comment over the and the song at the start, and you know, and they did
good stuff.
And then they always do that. They do it really well in Italy. They've got a feeling for it. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like Johnny Come Lately's from other countries that have bought into football recently. They get it. They really get it in Italy. So, and then afterwards, of course, they interview Klopp, and they say, and this is the Berlusconi channel, who one of the opinionists is Arrigo Sacchi, and Klopp sees this on the video that Sacchi's there. And he just says, look, more or less, he says, look, mate, it was you. If it wasn't for you, you know? And that was amazing, you know, because the young fans, they don't know who Arrigo Sacchi is. They don't know the Milan team that he put together and the high pressing and all of that. And of course, that comes from Rinus Michels before, which by there you have Ajax. And it's, as I was saying, it's all the great tapestry of football tradition that in some ways I was hoping it would have been, and this will take us on to Spurs, I was hoping it was going to be Liverpool-Ajax, because that's what I call a proper final. You know, it's old teams that have always... won the tournament in the years I was growing up. So Liverpool great, well, Klopp great.
Never mind Klopp. You went effortlessly from miserable bastard to poet and back to miserable bastard in the space of about 30 seconds.
I'm Scottish.
It was quite something. Well, you got Tuesday and Liverpool Barca, so I get Wednesday and Spurs Ajax. And it was, again, you know, look, as exciting as it was to see them go down the way they did and come back, the way they did, you know, Lucas Moura, I've never been a big fan of his, I've got to say. I thought he was massively overrated. But you can't knock him for the hat-trick. But with all the excitement, with, you know, Pochettino's tears afterwards and Harry Kane's reaction and the last kick of the game goal, the best part of that whole thing was the BT Sport clip in the studio with Lineker, Ferdinand and Glenn Hoddle.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
Yeah.
There are three football guys, real football guys, watching a game... Yes, Lineker's got a big connection to Spurs. Obviously, Hoddle is Mr. Spurs.
Yeah.
Ferdinand is a complete neutral. But just to watch three football people do that and go absolutely mental, it just shows you that it doesn't matter. If you're a fan, you're a fan. It doesn't matter what your connection to the game is, whether you've been inside it, whether you're just a fan watching it. This game does that to you at those moments. And to watch Rio Ferdinand go completely mental and then suddenly realize that the guy leaping higher than him had a heart attack a couple of months ago.
Well, he actually whacked him in the heart, if you look.
Yeah,
his hand whacks him in the chest.
Yeah, exactly. And you heard Glenn Hoddle with a really high percussion. He whacked me. But you know, imagine that to all of you, just to lose yourself in that moment. It was really special, and that more than the game to me, because, you know, I loved it and I was jumping up and down.
Yeah, great game.
And I'm not a Spurs fan. It doesn't matter, but it's just, it's football. That's what it does. And so to see it do that to you know, guys who were supposed to be commentating it was fantastic. It was just such a great moment for me. I loved it.
I think it was the moment of the week, and then afterwards when he composed himself, Hoddle, when he said, I'm so glad to still be here to see this.
Right.
And like, that's so authentic. That's exactly what somebody in his position would say. You know, I nearly never made it. But if there's one reason I made it, it was to see my team get to the final, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure his missus would have a few things to say about that.
Listen, it's football. You know, like, they understand.
I know.
At the end of the day, they do understand. Actually, not always. There's a guy out at the end, you know, the Spurs fan, and he's saying, look, and it's so funny, I haven't posted it yet, but I will. He says, look, and he looks to the camera, he says, my missus will be watching, and, you know, she'll need to realise that there's going to be some damage done to the bank account. You know, a couple of grand is going to be coming out because she knows I'm going there. She knows. I don't know how I'll get a ticket, but I will. And the money is not an object. So she just needs to manage her expectations now. There's going to be damage to the bank account. Fantastic.
Well, that's what it's all about. It was just, I mean, it was another great game of football. You know, it really was a great game of football. It had the ebb and flow, you know, two really good teams going at each other. But that moment to me was the bit that really got me.
Yeah, Pochettino was great at the end as well. You know, like after,
wasn't he just?
After the last time when he came into the dressing room, you know, with a more macho type approach this time, you know, it was all, it was a different thing. And I love him. You know, I think Spurs did really well. He did really well bringing on Llorente. You know, this is, you know, Pochettino's from that school. I call it the Argentinian Italy school of football, which is much more pragmatic. You know, it's all about adaptability, whatever it takes. You know, you try one thing, it's not working, you try another. Whereas there's a lot of kind of like fundamentalists that, you know, you always need to get your possession up and that will win the game. Pochettino's one of those ones that, you know, okay, it's not working. We need a lot of goals. We need 3 goals. We're going to put a guy up and we're going to let rumble them. We're going to rumble in the penalty area with a high ball. And like Llorente was superb. Chest control, head, feet, completely changed the game. And you know, I love to see that it's no longer just that boring left to right, right to left, the goalkeeper out to the fullback, centre back, midfield. You know, that's great. Okay, sure, it's part of the game now, but I like it much more
stick
human.
It in the mixer.
Well, just much more human. You know, like life's about one human beating another, or how you react to another human being. And Pochettino was great. By the way, Man United made the biggest. We've said this from all this season on the podcast. Solskjaer is a mistake. You know, and you could see it was a mistake. And the temporary manager, we said, if he has a couple of games, the pressure is that he'll get appointed. It will be a mistake. And on all of that, they've missed. You might not have seen he would have gone, but they could have had a real go at Pochettino because he's Man United through and through. You know, that would have been a great appointment for them.
Yeah, no, fair play to you. You called that absolutely spot on. Well, we can go over Thursday, the Arsenal Chelsea. I mean, it just lost. There wasn't any real. I mean, the penalty shootout was great. The Arsenal game was pretty much a foregone conclusion. You know, and it is the Europa League. But I've got to gloss over that one just because I
know what
when
you're
I
gonna
saw
say.
Those two results. I didn't see those two results. I didn't see those two games. Not because I wasn't awake. I just totally forgot they were on. Frankly,
there's the Europa League for you.
Yeah, exactly right. But when I saw the results, I literally was thinking, right, you know what? I need to start my stopwatch now until I see the first article that says, does this mean that English football is now going to take over?
I knew you were going to say that.
And you could set your watch by it. I mean, by the time the papers came out in the morning, there it was. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? It's absolutely ridiculous to say that. Yes, it's never been done before. That so what? These are all four good teams. They're all strong teams. You had every single game except the Arsenal game could have gone either way with a bit of luck. It's one of those fluke occurrences. They all deserve to be there, given that, but it doesn't herald the beginning of anything. You know, next year they could all get knocked out in the second round.
Well,
it's football.
Well, as a Scotsman, I'm going to come back at you on that one, which is unsurprising.
And tell me you hope I'm right.
No, I'm saying that I think you're underestimating a macro trend here. We've got one of our listeners who came on to the Twitter thing, and Christopher Moyer.
I saw it.
I don't think he's that far off when he's saying QE-induced dominance. Because here's my thing, right? The money gets you the talent. And whilst there are still some players, the really top ones that maybe are still not in English football, tell you what, the coaches are. You know, and that's where you spend your money. So you look at Guardiola, Klopp, you look at Pochettino, you look at Sarri, you know, they're all there because English football is the stage you want to be on. And they've delivered the poker, the four in the finals. I want to link this a little bit to what I think is a story that's underreported, which is what the hell is going on in the corridors of power. You know, you've got three organizations. You've got UEFA, then you've got the ECA, which is the big clubs, the big ones. And then you've got the European leagues, which is the amalgamation of all the league associations. So what's happening is basically this. The ECA, which is the big clubs, they've probably already got, you know, in financial terms, an underwriter for the kinds of monies per season that are astonishing. You know, I've heard from two different sources now in two different countries that we are talking £1 billion a year to be split amongst those clubs. So anytime these monies have been offered in the past, these big clubs go to UEFA and say, listen, unless you change it in our favour, you know, that sounds awful attractive to get 700 million ahead per club, an awful attractive. So guess what's happening? UEFA are dramatically changing the formats. And you know, it's leaked out that it's going to be three competitions. Let's forget the names. Three divisions with promotion and relegation, where basically the top division is closed to the big clubs. There's four spaces for smaller ones, which, by the way, will almost certainly be the candidates for relegation every year. And then, you know, the other ones, the other two leagues are for the smaller clubs, where I think that's quite exciting. You know, my own club, for example, is never and never will be involved in anything that could be called a relegation battle. But when you're in a league system like that one there, I actually will taste that for the first time, which is, I think that's progress.
Mate, as a Fulham fan, I'm telling you, it's no fun.
Yeah,
you're not going to enjoy it. the only difference is the Fulham thing gets dragged out over 38 agonising games. You've only got probably a dozen.
Yeah, but always remember, we might get relegated in Europe, but we'll still have these three shiny things in Scotland that can keep the people happy. That's, you know, bread and circuses, mate. Bread and circuses.
Fair enough.
So anyway, what I'm saying is UEFA has been strong-armed to change. And the European leagues, who see their whole being ripped apart, you know, the leagues are an amalgamation of, in any country, a Man United and a Bolton, an Ajax and a Vitesse, a Barcelona and a Celta Vigo, and they can't hold together. You know, the money is ripping them apart. So the leagues are screaming now because they can see the writing on the wall. It was on the wall 20 years ago, but it wasn't affecting them. You know, like the Spanish league, the Italian league, they were fine because their clubs were pretty much looked after. But now the European games are going to, you know, start playing in the weekends, and they can see the writing on the wall. And all of a sudden, they're mourning because it's now in their back garden. So you've got in these days, you know, there was quotes yesterday coming out talking about what we need. This is from the chairman of Torino, Italian league. What we need is the end of diplomacy and some leaders like Winston Churchill to take the fight to these people. This is open warfare now. You know, you've got big, big money. I'm talking PE companies. I don't know the names. These names haven't leaked out, but the ones that are involved in sport are probably aren't that far away. Big, big money. I'm serious money. The big clubs saying, well, we're Hollywood clubs now. We've got nothing in common with West Bromwich Albion or whatever. So we have to go that way. And the whole thing is getting ripped apart, Grant. And people, yeah, okay, they've all got, you know, awful excited about the last week on the field. Rightly so. But, you know, our game for the next 10 years is going to be decided in the next 10 days, I think.
Look, I saw this story too, obviously, and this was this was the one I thought you were going to go with, actually, as your own goal. But frankly, I'm surprised that this hasn't happened before. I'm surprised.
You're a finance guy. You're a finance guy, Grant. Let me
look. It's been, to your point, it's been on the cards for 20 years. I've been talking about this for 20 years, and I think the sort of CVC experience in rugby has probably made a lot of people sit up and take notice. You know, there are clearly catalysts that have moved this to the front of people's minds now. But, you know, I agree with you from a traditionalist point of view, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how, if they do this, the glamour ties of the, you know, Juve against Barca, or, you know, Real Madrid against
Man United.
Man United, whatever it may be. It's going to be interesting because those have always been very special ties to the fans, because they don't happen every year. You know, you rely on the draw, and then every now and again you get to play Juve home and away 1 year, and they're big occasions, and obviously they will be big occasions, but I wonder after a few years of this how big they'll be. I mean, when you play in Juve every year, do you go to Turin? Do you go to the away game? Probably not, right? You go to Turin because you want to go into that stadium and you want to experience it. But I think unlike the private equity clubs buying into domestic rugby competitions, I think this, yeah, it'll be shiny, it'll be spangly, but I don't know. I think this is going to be one of those things where suddenly Man United fans do want to play Burnley again. They do want to have their mates at the other end of the ground and that local rivalry and the bragging rights. I don't know. I can see why they want to do this. I think the initial thing will be a great success, but I think it is fraught with danger.
Well, you know, these are the conversations that the industry is having just now. And, you know, the one you've just said is a very strong line from two or three people that are in the industry, are very skeptical about it. And they say exactly that, you know, and you know, every time we come back and say big money, especially if it's big money that's not from Europe that understands football, they don't get this. They don't understand that Liverpool Everton is arguably more important than Liverpool Ajax, you know. Yeah. They don't get it. The spreadsheets do not translate that.
Oh, I was here in Singapore with an Everton fan who was distraught after that Liverpool game. I mean, he was absolutely distraught that they won.
Good for him.
And I said, come on, seriously, you must have...
He said, fuck
no.
That.
I said, this is a...
Bragging rights.
This is a nightmare, which I just thought was fantastic. But that's, you're right. I mean, that's what it's about, right? It's about your mates giving you a hard time endlessly over that, and you're going to have to stick it for a while. And I mean, I'm sorry, but you might have a mate who's a Juve supporter, but he's not going to be in the pub next to you giving it all
That's one of the arguments that keeps coming up. You know, you want to go into your office and give it to your mate. You know, that's what football has traditionally been about. And you can only do that if they live quite close to you. You know, Celtic Rangers, you know, all the...
Well, you've got Uber now, Rog. You've got Uber now.
That's not going to take you to Rome. I'm sorry.
Listen, if it's that important to you, You'll get a train and hitchhike your way over there to give it to your mate. But look, I think
it's a serious thing. This is big money that doesn't understand, doesn't really understand, that is going to sledgehammer through greed the big clubs. And UEFA are being absolutely strong-armed. And sadly, you know, as you say, 20 years ago, everybody could have taken the moral high ground on this. But what they did 20 years ago was they caved and made it all about just five big leagues. So now they're weaker. Those leagues are weaker. If they had everybody in it now, the other ones are kind of saying, well, you know, tell you what, you know, where we are today, let's take Celtic in the Scottish League, where we are today, we're not at the big boys' table. So change is good. We don't know how the balls are going to drop when they're thrown up in the air, but there's a chance I may get into a Super League if I'm Celtic. So I'm quite happy. You know, you should have listened to us 20 years ago when we proposed an Atlantic League. You didn't, and now you're squealing. You had no vision, so it's your fault. You know, that's as a Celtic fan, I kind of look forward to this change because the status quo does nothing for me. So I'm looking forward to change. But the ones that have got things to lose, which are principally the English clubs, you know, because, you know, you've got a top six and only four of these are going to get in probably. So two are going to be left on the sidelines. Then you've got big clubs just outside that, Newcastle, you know, a Leeds that comes back, Everton. The English football has got the global stage just now. The Premiership is the global stage, and it's going to be awful difficult for those clubs to. And then there's people that do the arithmetic and they say, well, you know, 700 million a year from the Super League, but, you know, I kind of get close to that between what I get from the Premiership today and what I get in the Champions League, and then I've still got my derbies. It's for the English clubs, the big ones, it's going to be marginal. For clubs like Juventus, for PSG, that are in utterly dominant leagues where they're dominant, it's really, really, really easy to say, yeah, I'm going for this.
Yeah. No, I hear. Well, look, we've talked nothing but football for the best part of an hour, and I think it's probably time to bring another week to a close, Rogers. And what a week it's been. So we'll wrap it up there. And listen, we can only hope that this weekend, the final week of the Premier League, gives us more excitement. I mean, who knows? This Liverpool-Man City thing, maybe there could be a surprise. I will certainly be watching.
Doubt it.
No, I doubt it too. But hey, listen, everybody doubted Liverpool would win. Everybody doubted Spurs.
Maybe it's. But listen, before we go, because this was one of my other own goals, guess how many tickets are available for both English teams for the Europa League final?
What? How many between them?
Each. Well, whatever.
Oh, it'll be like 5,000 each. Isn't ridiculous?
Bang on, 6,000 each.
That's what it is, yeah. I know, it's absurd.
And you know where it is? You know where the final is?
Yeah, it's Baku.
So it's
like 12,000 miles from England.
Right, so you're a good lad, you know, that's been brought up in the shed and everything like that, and you're going to go to a European final. It's already hard. It's in Baku, you know. And then, I'm going to really make the effort. Well, actually, you're in a lottery. It's 1 in 3 because all the fat cats have got the tickets and they won't have to worry about the 56-hour travel to get there because they'll be taken in, you know, corporate, whatever. They're really asking for trouble, these guys. You know, they're asking for trouble. They have got no EQ at all. They're tone deaf to the fans and it's coming.
Well, I'm just worried for the fans that misheard it and thought the final was being held at B&Q. That's what worries me. They'll all be camping out in the car park.
Which anyway, B&Q? Listen, Roger, yeah, let's do it. Let's finish.
It's been another so fun week. Hopefully, Sunday will give us more to talk about next week. But in the meantime, before next week, please do, as always, share the podcast with your friends, get them to subscribe, rate and review us on iTunes. It all helps. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that very easily. You'll find us at EntertainedR. That's A-R-E, the word. And if you want to follow me, you can do that very easily too by looking for at TTMYGH.
You can follow myself as usual at RPM Como. But I would say, together with Grant, you know, we're getting a huge amount of feedback now on the podcast. Really, really positive. So, you know, don't keep it private to us. You know, post it on the Twitter feed. You know, review the podcast because we want to keep this going and grow it. And you know, it's really nice, everybody says all those lovely things, you know, privately, but you know, we need to make this more awareness. So thank you very much.
Now listen, this is like the two Ronnies finishing without saying it's good night for me, it's good night for him. So I'm gonna do this again, Rog.
Oh yeah, you like your catch line, do you?
I do. Yeah, I do like it when we close it. So Rog, how can they follow you on Twitter?
As usual, RPM Como, as in the lake.
There you go, as in the lake. The world is a right place to be once again.
Yes, it is.
Rog, I'll talk to you next week.
You take care. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.